As the year draws to an end, we once again mark the 200th anniversary of the Louisiana Purchase, this time in conversation with Roger Kennedy, the author of Mr. Jefferson's Lost Cause, Land, Farmers, Slavery, and the Louisiana Purchase. Mr. Kennedy, who joins us from his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is Director Emeritus of the National Museum of American History of the Smithsonian Institution and the author of several other books, including Burr, Hamilton, and Jefferson. He also served as Director of the National Park Service during the 1990s. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me start by asking you to explain the following lines in the introduction to your book, which I think alert the reader to the focus of your book and will alert our listeners to the subject of our conversation. You wrote, "The Louisiana Purchase is the central event in this story. Thomas Jefferson is its central character."
Well, the central event is the moving of the Mississippi River from the margin of the American Republic to its center fold, the doubling of its territory, of course. The central figure is that person who happened to be president at the time that Napoleon abandoned his dream of a renewed French New World Empire and offered the rather undelineated Louisiana to the United States.
Okay, so we're looking at Jefferson in the context of that purchase. So let's talk about Jefferson as your central character, and we'll take him on first. You write that Jefferson's stated aspirations, his vision for America, what was that vision?
Jefferson said throughout his life that he dreamed of a republic of free and independent farmers, a little bit of domestic manufacturing around the side, but dreamed of such a republic without slavery. And so he said repeatedly. That was Mr. Jefferson's lost cause.
You say stated, though. Are you suggesting that he was not really committed to this?
No, I think it's more subtle than that. I don't believe that we historians or citizens can enter into the mind and heart of someone long departed. All we can do when we write history is to take what someone says, observe their actions, and then see whether or not we think it's likely that they meant what they said. It is my opinion that Mr. Jefferson did mean what he said, and that his life was, as a consequence, a bitter disappointment.
I want to pursue that one, but first let's get our central event into the story here, the Louisiana Purchase. And for those of our listeners who didn't catch earlier shows, give us a little background on how the purchase came to pass.
Napoleon had attempted to, through an enormous army he sent under the command of his brother-in-law, to capture the prize of the New World at that time, which was the island of Haiti, the greatest sugar-producing area in the world, more important at that time than India was to the French or the British. That failure was brought about by Toussaint Louverture and his largely but not completely black government. The defeat of that expedition rendered Louisiana, meaning the mainland, no longer useful as the primary supply source, primarily hides and draft animals and wheat, to keep the sugar plantations going. So when Toussaint's heroic resistance to that Napoleonic endeavor was successful, Napoleon and Talleyrand, serving for him as his foreign minister, concluded that they would get rid of their claim on Louisiana, which, of course, they didn't own and actually weren't in possession of either. The Spanish were still there. And all that happened actually was that Napoleon had extricated under coercion a promise from Spain to turn over Louisiana in return for a promise that if Spain turned over Louisiana, they would never turn it over in turn to the United States. Napoleon's success was in getting the United States to pay for Louisiana, which France then occupied in the twinkling of an eye, less than a 2.5 month period, and the United States purchased the Napoleonic claim on Louisiana for an immense sum of money. That's what That's what happened. We got, however, a third of a continent, which we're very glad to have.
Okay, we got a third of a continent, so let's bring the character and the event together, and let's ask, how did this purchase of a third of a continent impact Jefferson's vision?
Jefferson was presented with a third opportunity to achieve a society without slavery. The first opportunity, east of the Appalachians, during the Revolutionary War, we did abolish slavery in half the states of the Union, though not in Virginia and the South. Second opportunity, between the Appalachians and the Mississippi River, we, in many, many instances, and only barely, permitted slavery to expand south of the Ohio, where it wasn't, of course, at all established when we achieved our independence. Louisiana was the third great opportunity. There was very little slavery in Louisiana when we bought it, and in fact, most scholars agree that slavery was withering up in Louisiana when we bought it. Had we put a little more pressure on its withering, and had the Congress been successful, as it nearly was on three occasions, in stopping the spread of slavery into Louisiana, but just a little extra exertion had occurred, we might very well have never had a civil war, because we wouldn't have had the problem of the expansion of slavery into the territories purchased.
Okay, I want to come back to that issue of slavery, but first, clarify another thing. In your book, you make reference to the Invisible Empire. What was the Invisible Empire?
That's the British Empire operating no longer as an ostensible imperial power with armies and navies and viceroys, but instead a commercial empire bent upon the recolonialization of the American South as a source of cotton for the British mills. The British had an enormous effect upon American politics after we became independent politically, but after the South remained dependent economically. The Invisible Empire exerted such enormous gravitational force upon Mr. Jefferson's career and presidency that Britain got a predictable, dependable source of slave-produced cotton out of the deal. They were the big winners.
Were we the big losers? By that, I simply mean, unlike most accounts, which clearly just sing the praises of the purchase and say this is the greatest thing that ever happened to the United States, your assessment is a little more tempered than that. Where do you fall in that scheme?
Thank you. That's a well-modulated inquiry. The opportunity, of course, to achieve an empire of freedom, which is what Jefferson said that he wanted, the opportunity is a dazzling one, to have a continent free of slavery would have been something never seen before in human affairs. It would have been simply dazzling. As it was, we acquired an enormous piece of real estate for which we are grateful, in which many of us were born, but we also inherited the curse of slavery upon it, and inherent in that curse of slavery was the irrepressible conflict between slavery and freedom, which cost us millions of lives in the Civil War.
Now, it's interesting if we add to that another issue that comes up, especially in shorter accounts or textbook accounts of the Louisiana Purchase, and that is most of the more general histories imply that one way or another, our taking the territory we would call the Louisiana Territory was inevitable. Do you see that as the case, or was it actually a possibility that we might not have had that territory?
Oh, I think almost nothing's inevitable in history. Certainly, the battening of slavery upon Louisiana territories was not inevitable. It's entirely possible that Spain, which had had a resurgence of vitality in the 1780s and 90s, might have been able to hold on to Louisiana, that enormous territory, at least until the American Republic had filled in some more. It seems to me, if we're doing sort of hypothetical outcomes, that the triumphant resumption of British imperial power, which came enormously quickly after 1783. After all, they received a defeat, which we call the American Revolution, which was a world war in 1783. By 1815, they were Britain triumphant. The great power in the world was the British. And it opens an enormously interesting question if the Canadian border had proceeded down the Mississippi, so to speak.
Would you care to pursue that just a moment? What do you think if it would have happened if that scenario had spun out? Or don't you have a crystal ball that you can look
well,
into?
Well, it's fun to play. It's a kind of a computer game, isn't it?
It is.
What would it be like? Well, that would lead us into, it seems to me, very useful speculations as to the essential distinctions between Canadian society and that of the United States. One thing we can be sure of is that there would not have been slavery in the Louisiana Territory had that outcome occurred. I don't want to suggest for a moment that as a person who was born out there, whose life has been largely spent in the territory acquired, that I wish it were in any way Canadian. I simply think it's very important for us to understand that there are two European-based great democracies operating in North America, and one of them is different from the other.
Okay. Interesting for history's sake. Let me ask you another question, and let's return to Jefferson, because this inevitably comes up. Much ink has been spilled on Jefferson and his views, especially on slavery, but even on the land. Going back to the writing of the Declaration of Independence and holding him up as a founding father of democracy. At some point, the Jeffersons repeatedly compromising. You alluded to it earlier with the three lost opportunities. Where do you stand in terms of Jefferson and how would you explain his behavior, his attitude towards slavery?
Oh, I've been in and around public life since 1948, which is rather a long time. And I've watched some very great figures, including the four cabinet officers I've worked for at one time or another, and six presidents one way or another. Many of the things we strive to achieve, we do not succeed in achieving. Many times we are overwhelmed in our lives by forces larger than those that we can control. I think that's the story of Thomas Jefferson. I think it's useless and maybe a little bit silly to use words like hypocrisy. Hypocrisy implies an intention to do something different than that which we state is an objective, and I just don't think that's a useful inquiry to pursue. I think what happened to Jefferson is that he simply did not have, as his best friend Mr. Madison said, he was not a person made for heroism. He was a person made for politics, for accommodation, and for yielding when the people that mattered most to him wished him to yield, and the people who mattered most to him were the planters of Virginia. I just don't think, and most of the people who knew him didn't think, that Jefferson was a person, shall we say, of Lincoln's qualities. He was not, or Washington's.
Well, you may have the last word here on the Louisiana Purchase. This is the last show we're going to do this year on the 200th anniversary. So let me ask you to sum up things you've been hinting at here, including in your last answer here. What's Jefferson's legacy? What's this lost cause you write about? And how does it relate to the Louisiana Purchase?
Any person who undertakes public life does so because they have a set of things they'd like to achieve. To think otherwise is to have a very reduced view of why people enter public life. In Jefferson's case, he stated very consistently and purposefully over his entire lifetime that he wished to achieve a republic of free and independent farmers. That's not what his beloved Southland got. And the purchase of Louisiana battened slavery upon the South even more profoundly and expanded it into the American West. That is, in my view, a tragic story.
And that's where we'll have to end it. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Please join us again soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Roger Kennedy, the author of Mr. Jefferson's Lost Cause, Land, Farmers, Slavery, and the Louisiana Purchase, published by Oxford University Press. This is Talking History.